Welcome to Game On with Grace, where we're not just talking cricket wins and losses, we're talking off-field antics, guilty pleasures, and the drive that never quits. Hey everyone, I'm Grace Hayden, and today we're joined by one of the most accomplished cricketers in the world, a player who's rewriting the record books while leading her team with maturity beyond years. Laura is the captain of South Africa women's cricket team and one of the most technically gifted batters in the game. She's the first South African woman to reach 5,000 ODI runs, 2,000 T20 international runs, and in 2024, she became only the third woman ever to score a century in all three international formats. I could go on, but I'd spend all day listing her accomplishments. We'll talk about leading under pressure, balancing ambition with reality, and what keeps her grounded through it all. Game on. Well, welcome to Game On with Grace, Laura. So excited to have you on the podcast. I always start by asking how my guests are and where they are in the world, because I know that cricket is one of those sports that take us all around the world. So you never know where one of the guests are going to be, but tell us where you are and how you are right now.
We are in England at the moment, in Portsmouth. We just got here a couple of days ago for our World Cup prep. It's good to be here. It's nice and sunny. So yeah, happy to be prepping for the World Cup.
How's the prep going? I mean, massive time of the year for you girls. I'm sure the tension and the excitement is definitely building. You're not far away. How's it all going?
It's good. We got together probably about a week ago in South Africa. Had a bit of team building, had some training sessions, and then flew over here in a couple of groups. So everyone's here now, and we got our first official session tomorrow, and then have a few warm-up games against Australia, which I think will be a good test pre-tournament. So yeah, pretty excited for that.
Are you happy that it's against Australia? I mean, arguably you two are some of the best quality talent in the World Cup, that's for sure. But do you like the fact that it's against Australia, a hard team, or would you prefer someone maybe a little bit easier?
Happiest against them. A little bit strange because our first World Cup game is against them. So it's a bit weird playing someone in three games right before our first game. But I think, you know, you got to sort of play the best to see where you're at. So I think it'll be a perfect test for us heading into the tournament. They're obviously a world-class side. So yeah, I think it'll be a good way to sort of gauge where we're at pre-tournament and a good little test as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, exciting times ahead for you girls. Right. Well, this show and podcast is all about, you know, your competitive drive. And I thought that I'd, you know, start the podcast. Oh my gosh, I can't speak today. Start the podcast with a couple of little game on icebreakers, I call them. Just all about your competitive drive because you're an athlete and that's inevitable. My first question is, what is something completely non-sport related that you're way too competitive about?
We were actually playing cards the other day, and I got really upset when I was losing. So yeah, my friends were all laughing at me. but yeah, I'm pretty competitive in pretty much everything, small things, and I get pretty frustrated if I lose. A simple card game is a good example of that.
I feel that. I am the exact same way. My partner's like, oh my gosh, can you tame down the competitiveness, yeah, especially when it's something that doesn't need that level of emotion. So I feel that, especially card games, so frustrating.
I know. And then you kind of ruin it for everyone, but I can't help it. It's not fun.
Oh, well. all right. Next one. Have you ever gone way too far trying to win something that absolutely didn't matter?
Maybe something in golf. I play a bit of golf been playing more of it lately, and probably also get way too competitive even though I'm still pretty bad at it, and get way too focused even though I don't really know what I'm doing. So yeah, that's probably an example.
Well, it's so frustrating. I know that because I've just started to play golf myself. I've got some new clubs waiting for me to play with them. But yeah, I get that. I guess some days you're really on and then other days you are so off, and that's the most Definitely. Frustrating part. Okay, but yesterday I was playing completely fine and then now it looks like I don't even know how to hit a ball. So,
and you don't know why. You don't know what you're doing wrong. It's just not working.
There's no explanation for it. Exactly. You could be feeling well, exactly the same as the day before, and then, you just get
the most frustrating sport.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you bring your clubs with you all around the world?
Sometimes. I didn't now because I thought it would be a bit busy. But for like home tours, if I can see on the schedule, we'll have a few days, and I'll take them with.
Yeah, love it. Actually, on that, what is a sort of schedule look like for you girls building up to World Cup, especially when you're in the prep mode? What's the day-to-day look like?
Day-to-day, probably got a training. We usually have some form of a gym or a run. So if we're training in the morning, then we'll probably have a gym in the afternoon. And then I think World Cups generally come with more meetings. I think especially as captain as well, there's just a lot more meetings, a lot more chats to be had because every game is against a different side. Whereas in a bilateral, you can kind of meet once at the start and get everything done. But yeah, a lot more meetings with the coaches, a lot more team meetings, analysis meetings. So yeah, a lot of chatting. And days get pretty full. There's always stuff to do, whether it's a physio assessment or a one-on-one chat with a batting coach or a bowling coach. I think your day fills up pretty quickly, especially in a World Cup. So yeah, a busy few weeks ahead, some media stuff as well. But yeah, I think we had a bit of time off now, so we're all ready for it.
Ready and riled up. I love it. Okay, I got distracted from my competitive question, so I'll go back to it. Would you rather win by dominating or win by coming from behind?
Probably by dominating. I think, in the past, we've probably done a few wins where we've like snuck into the finals or come from behind. But it'll be cool, I think, as a team if we really dominate this World Cup or a series going forward. I think it's pretty cool.
I'm sure the confidence that it brings when you just keep winning game after game, you just feel unstoppable.
Yes, exactly.
Well, let's channel that energy for you and you and the girls this World Cup. That would be great. What's the moment in your career that best sums you up your competitive drive?
I'm not too sure. Probably making the World Cup final in India. I think that was a pretty tough tournament for us. I personally was in not great form leading up to this tournament. But then, just found my feet a bit near the end and found a way to sort of make it happen, to score some runs at the back end. I think the whole group as well. I think we didn't have the best start, had a bit of a scratchy start, and then sort of found our flow and momentum and had some big wins near the end of the tournament and managed to make it to the final. Then we lost, which wasn't too great. But hopefully a bit better this time around.
Yeah, I'm sure. Who's the greatest competitor you've ever faced and what made them different?
I'm going to say Marizan Cup in my team. She's probably the greatest competitor that I've played with. She's also extremely competitive in everything that she does. And it's very hardworking, very intense. Nothing that she does is sort of by accident. She's very meticulous in her prep. If I come up against her in the leagues, I know she's going to be a tough one to face. I think she's a great competitor.
You're like, oh, God, not her again. When she's on our team, we love her. But when we're against her, it's not good.
Yeah. Exactly.
What teammate would you never want to play against in a pressure situation? Is it her or is there anyone else?
It's probably her.
I love it.
But I guess maybe Shubnam Ishmael as well. She bowls pretty quick and she's nice to us when she bowls in the nets, doesn't bowl too many bumpers or anything. I think if we play against her in a real match in a league or something, she'll bounce me.
Love it. What's a rivalry match that instantly flips a switch inside you?
Probably playing against Australia. It's not really a rivalry, but I think they've sort of been the best side for many years, and They're probably the most consistent side in the world. So just being able to play against them, I think you need to bring your A game, and you need to play your best cricket to beat them, because you know they're going to be pretty good on the day. So yeah, I think it just brings a little bit of extra focus that you want to do really well against them.
Who's the best trash talker you've played with?
Maybe Sonalu Jafta, our wicketkeeper. I would, yeah, if I were a batter, I'd find her quite annoying behind the stumps. She just, yeah, talks a lot of trash behind the stumps. I don't, yeah, just a lot of annoying things that would bother me as a batter, but
those in the team though. Yeah. You do.
She brings the energy.
Yeah, exactly. All right, it's time to take a quick break, but we'll be back on the other side with Human Behind the Hype. Okay, well, we've had a little bit of fun with the competitive drive segment, but let's get into Human Behind the Hype. So the whole concept of this is we get to know you outside of your stats and accolades, which you've got so many. But first up, I want to start with, where did cricket and the love for cricket begin with you? Did you always love sport growing up? Was cricket always something that you were passionate about? Where did the love begin?
It sort of started when I was very young, probably like 5 or 6 in school. I had a lot of friends at the time who were boys, and they played cricket at break time, just in the garden at school. And I just tagged along and then absolutely fell in love with the game. I didn't really find it weird at the time that I was the only girl playing. But yeah, I just enjoyed it and just loved batting at break time. Whenever we got the chance, I'd just go and bat. And yeah, I just stuck with it, eventually found my way to a girls team when I was like 14, maybe. And yeah, never really looked back, just still really enjoy it. So.
Oh, well, that's the main thing. You got to do what you love, because you never work a day in your life.
Exactly.
Tell me, growing up, was there a particular cricketer or just, I guess, inspiration as an athlete in general that you looked up to?
Not really. Probably some of the men's cricketers that were playing for South Africa at the time, because I didn't really know much about women's cricket until I was older. So probably just Jacques Cullis, watched him quite a lot growing up. From other sports, loved Roger Federer, always just watching him play. And then as I got older, always just loved the way that Meg Lanning batted. Yeah, sad that she's retired. But yeah, she was probably my sort of, but it's a bit weird because like she's not that old, but yeah, I just like the way that she bats. So
yeah, absolutely. Was there anyone that when you did start to play cricket that you kind of like to replicate or I guess take points of their game and bring it into yours?
Also not really. Yeah, I think the players that I always liked were quite like explosive players, which was quite different to me back in the day. So yeah, I always wished I could hit sixes like AB and Herschel Gibbs and those guys who used to play for South Africa. But yeah, nothing too serious. I just enjoyed batting and sort of doing it my way, I guess.
Your achievements are amazing. I mean, you were 11 when you first played for the Western Province under-19s. You were 13 when you played for the senior team, 16 when you made your international debut. What was it like being the youngest in the room at sort of every level? And how did you handle the pressure?
Yeah, I think nowadays it would be a bit different. We've obviously got a couple of better structures in place within South African cricket. I think back then we kind of just had under-19 cricket and the senior team. So if you were young and you were good, you were kind of straight into those teams. There wasn't like any other 15 or under-15, under-16, you know, steps to get there. Yeah, it was always a bit weird being really young, especially when I was 11, 12, playing with 18-year-olds, you know, the conversations are slightly different in the dressing room and that sort of thing.
I'm sure. But it was cool. You learn a lot very quick.
Yes. But I think I it also helped me learn a lot cricket-wise pretty quick. Obviously, being that young and facing people like Shibnam Ishmal in the nets, who still played for Western Province at the time. So yeah, you get exposed to quite a high level of cricket quite young. So I think that fast-forwarded my experience a little bit. But looking back now, I was probably a little bit too young to be there. So I'm glad there's better structures in place.
Yeah, tell me about that. How you've seen the way that women's cricket has sort of progressed and really ramped up over the last few years. It's so exciting to see the place that it's in now and the potential and possibility that we're heading into. What's your sort of take on how much you've seen it change?
Yeah, it's changed massively. I think right after school, when I was about 18, I was still deciding whether I wanted to go and study or if I wanted to play cricket. And at the time, it was a very tough decision because I didn't know if cricket was going to be, you know, financially a viable career option and if I could make a career out of it. Because back then, the Cricket South African contracts weren't that great. There weren't really many leagues. So it was a bit of a risk to choose to play cricket. And when you look at it now, it's like, how did I even think about it? Like, women's cricket is so massive at the moment. And it's been so exciting to be a part of that growth and see how much the game has changed. It's been like, even just in South Africa, I think we have domestic contracts now. Like I said, we have age group cricket. I think there's still a long way to go for us. But just the amount that it's changed since I was 16 and made my debut has been massive.
The opportunities just feel endless at the moment in terms of cricket and where it can potentially go as a sport. I mean, we're seeing it sort of go into countries that I personally didn't think that cricket would ever touch. And to see that expansion is really cool. Especially cricket being such a big part of my life growing up, to see how, I mean, from a obviously massive international sport that it was back then, but to see how big it's got to now is just, it's really, really exciting space that we're in.
Yeah, definitely. And it's so cool to sort of be in it while it's growing and to be a part of it.
Yeah,
and to
I'm sure.
Actually see the difference is amazing.
Yeah. And all the league cricket too that's happening as well. What do you love most about that opportunity to play?
Very cool. Think, like, for example, there's World Cup that's happening in England now. I've already played at most of the venues in the 100. Sort of know what to expect. It's not going to be a total foreign experience. You get to learn more about other players. You get to play with other players. Like, I've been playing in the Big Bash in Australia for probably eight years or something, and to be able to play alongside players that play for Australia, getting to work with different coaches, getting to train at Adelaide Oval every other day. It's all really valuable learnings as a cricketer. And I think it's made me a lot better player, being able to play in these, you know, three leagues every single year and be exposed to different cricket. But at the same time, I think other teams get to play with me and get to learn my weaknesses and get to bowl at me in the nets a bit more than usual. So I think it goes sort of both ways. So I wouldn't say anyone has a bit of an unfair advantage, but I think it's helped me learn quite a bit as a cricketer.
I'm sure. I mean, being able to mix with a lot of the internationals, it's a really unique opportunity, and I understand how it would be, you know, a great thing to obviously personally learn from other athletes, but also, you know, learn their weaknesses when you're having to come up against them, but then on the other hand they learn yours. So do you ever try and have to keep a few things in your sleeve?
A little bit. It's hard though, because you want to work with the coaches there and get better. But you also don't want to say too much. Like, for example, our Adelaide Strikers coach, Luke Williams, is now assistant coach or batting coach with England women. I don't know how many of my secrets he's telling them pre-World Cup. Hopefully not too many. I think it's just, if you want to learn and get better, you kind of got to tell them, or I'm sure they know your weaknesses anyway. But maybe not say everything.
Thing. Yeah, otherwise that's not good when they start doing coaching roles for other teams. So yeah, keep a few things up the sleeve for sure. Now, you mentioned, you know, previously that you faced having to, you know, choose between studying and then choose between actually progressing in your international cricket career. You know, you graduated the top of your class, 7 distinctions, and you were going to go down the path of medical school, but you decided to not go down that avenue to play cricket. That's such a huge decision at 17 to make. Do you have any, not regrets, but do you have any feelings towards that looking back at it now?
I don't have any regrets, which is good. I think the way that cricket's taken off, I'm really happy that I was able to be a part of it. I think if I was in med school now, I'd be in my internship year somewhere in the middle of South Africa and probably watching this World Cup and being very sad that I never got to be a part of it. But yeah, I think a little bit of sort of a, you know, what am I going to do post-cricket feeling? Because the plan was always medicine. So I'm not too sure what I'm going to do after cricket now. But for now, I'm very happy with my decision. I'm not too sure if I'll go back to med school because it's quite a process. It's like 6 years of studying and 2 years of internship and stuff. So I'll see. I'll figure it out once I'm 35.
Exactly. I guess that is the great thing about, you know, study is you can go back to that whenever you choose. Yes, it's a big chunk of your time when you want to commit to medical school. That's one of the degrees that probably not a lot of people want to leave too late in life, but never say never, you know what I mean? When you're an athlete, you only have this small window of opportunity to really go for it. So, I mean, credit to you for actually going at it. And at such a young age, having to make such a life-altering decision too. It's just, it's a challenge for anyone.
Yeah, it was tough. I think it took me like 2 years to decide. I had a sort of a leave of absence from uni for 2 years I didn't know what to do and just ended up staying in cricket.
Yeah, well, great call. You made a really good decision there. Well, do you ever think about what life would look like though if you went down the medical school route though? I mean, it's sort of hard to think about now because you've been so successful in the cricket space. But do you ever envisage what life would look like? Yes, you said that you'd be doing an internship somewhere in South Africa looking at the TV going, gosh, I wish that was me.
Yeah.
But when times get tough, or maybe when you're going through a form slump and you go, how the hell am I going to get out of this? Does it ever cross your mind?
It does. Especially when times go tough and you're losing and you're out of form and not really enjoying it. And you're like, you know, is this really what I want to be doing with my life? But I think being in medicine would have been even tougher. I think their hours are pretty brutal. I think their consequences are a bit bigger than just losing a game of cricket. So I think that would have had its own challenges. I sometimes think that. And then I think, you know, it's actually, in the grand scheme of things, losing a game of cricket is probably not the worst thing that can happen. But I do think about it sometimes. But I'm pretty happy with the path I've chosen. So,
yeah. Now, I heard that you play guitar. Is that right?
Play like very, very basic, couple of chords. I haven't played in years. It was sort of like a phase in high school. Played a bit of guitar, recorded some songs in old school studio. But that was ages ago.
That's such a cool skill to have. I'm so jealous. I really want to be able to commit to the time to actually learn how to play an instrument properly. Like, it's an unbelievable talent to be able to whip out.
Thanks. It's tough to learn as an adult. I'm glad I learned some of the basics when I was a kid, because I try to take up a bit of piano recently and it's so hard. It's impossible to start as an adult. You've really got to be super committed.
Is that? I don't understand. Why can we not pick up new skills as easily when we're older? It's not fair.
It's not fair. We're so much smarter.
Yeah, like even learning a new language, right? Like I spend so much time in India, and the amount of times I've tried to learn Hindi, I can't. I don't know happens. Every year, I try and I fail. I like learn three words and that's it.
I learn the same five words. I forget them.
Yeah. Namaste is about it for me. And then I'm like, okay, I can't remember the rest.
Yeah. And Shubhratri. I don't know what that means.
Yeah, but it just sounds cool. So remember that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. How do you find India? Do you enjoy being over there? Do you find it challenging? Because some people, I think it's one of those places that's super polarizing. And you people either love it or they, you know, hate it, lack of a better word. I mean, for me, I love it, but I also have that feeling, not hate by any means, but I do struggle at times, especially when you're there for long periods of time. It's one of those places that you kind of feel a bit isolating. What do you feel about India?
A bit of both, because it's so different to home and what we're used to. I think being there for long periods of time can get tough. Sometimes you just want to, you know, be at home and go to the beach and do your normal things and have your normal food and stuff. But I think cricket-wise, it's such a cool experience. Obviously, the crowds are massive. The stadiums are super nice. It's a really nice, you know, place to bat and place to explore. So a bit of both. I can sort of see both sides of it.
Yeah. Travel is such a big part of what we do. How do you cope with being on the road as much as what you are in totally different countries as well?
Yeah. It's getting harder, I think, the older I'm getting. I'm getting a bit old and grumpy and sort of just want to be at home a bit more. but when I was younger, it was obviously, you know, super exciting and you're exploring new places and I thought it was the coolest thing ever. But when you start visiting the same places over and over, it gets a bit tougher, especially now with the schedule. I think, you know, I've been away from home for quite a lot the last couple of years. So I think just to make the most of the time that I am at home, when I'm at home, just really enjoying it, really making an effort to catch up with friends and family and not leaving my apartment sometimes for a few days. Just to sort of really recharge before going on tour again.
That's sometimes the hardest part is actually catching up with friends because you miss them so much when you're away. But then when you only have such a small amount of time at home, like sometimes it's 2-3 days, sometimes it's a couple of weeks, maybe it's a week. But like you need to also have that time where you just zen and take a moment for yourself.
So busy and so social.
Yeah. And then when you have to cut everyone, you're like, I'm now even more exhausted than I was going to have to go home. Yeah.
Sometimes when I'm home, it's more busy than when I'm on tour because you're trying to squeeze everything in. And then you got to sort out like all your life admin as well, like sort out your car registration and your taxes and all of that's happening at the same time.
Yeah. The life stuff. How boring. You're like, wait, get me back on tour so I can run around
with this. I have like no responsibilities. I just have to show up at practice when I need to be there.
Yeah. No, I totally feel that. That is brutal part about what we do. Hey. Tell me though, what is your favorite place that you've gone on tour to? Or have you got a favorite tour story that you can share?
Favorite place, probably Australia. I think it's like, it's very similar to South Africa, sort of the way of life and beaches and weather and coffee. And yeah, I like my coffee and your coffee is pretty good over there. So probably Australia, I think it's just the most comfortable. Doesn't really feel like you're away too much. Don't really have any big stories. I just, enjoy spending time over there. And it's probably the easiest one to spend long periods of time.
Yeah, I agree. Especially the beach. Having the beach right there. Just our way of life is and we're pretty similar, Australians and, you know, South Africans, kind of get each other. We always get on when there's, you know, Sappers and when there's Australians in a room, we're usually together.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty chill. Pretty similar, I think, like get exercise done in the morning, go to the beach, go for a swim, have a coffee. And where I stay in Cape Town, I think it's pretty similar sort of way of life. So
yeah, it definitely. I mean, I haven't been to Cape Town since I was little, so I need to get back over there. I'd love to do SA20. That looks like an unreal tournament.
Yeah, that's awesome. Nice vibes. And yeah, Cape Town's beautiful. You've got to go.
I definitely do. Definitely do. I'll have to message you and get your recommendations.
Yes.
Now, talk to me about being a captain. Do you love the pressure and the intenseness that it brings? When you were first appointed to be captain, walk us through the emotion of that for you.
I remember when it first happened, it was kind of sudden. It was something that I thought I'd maybe do one day, but it was a little earlier than I expected in my career. So I had to think about it a little bit if I was sort of ready for the opportunity. But yeah, then I ended up taking it and had a lot to learn at first, because I've always just been a batter growing up and didn't have much captaincy experience. And now I've sort of got to tell the bowlers what I think they should do. And that was a lot of learning, because I've never bowled really in my life. So that was hard. But the captaincy, I enjoy that I have something else to do in a game, especially as a batter. So if I don't score runs, I enjoy that I can still contribute a little bit in the field, whether it's a little thing of advice or a bowling change that worked and took a wicket. I think it's quite rewarding when we win. But yeah, it has been more hard work. Obviously a lot of extra meetings, a lot of extra things on my plate. So a bit of both. I enjoy it, but it is more work, definitely.
And I'm sure it's hard fronting up to the media too, when you're personally, you know, devastated about a result, or maybe even excited about a result as well, and you're having to be the one dragged out to the walls.
Yeah. And I'm not the most social person, so it's a lot of extra talking. a lot of forced social, like speaking to media and that sort of thing. It's probably not my forte. But yeah, I've tried to get a bit better at it.
I'm sure you do a great job. I mean, I would absolutely hate it. I'd be too erratic. I couldn't do it. I'd say something that was a little bit and then it'd be everywhere and I'd be in trouble. How do you stay so measured though when you're so, you know, disappointed about something? Like, obviously you're so competitive. How do you just bottle that all up and leave it to later? Because I guess sometimes with media, they're so good at poking and prodding you.
They are. They're good at asking, you know, questions to get a bit of a reaction. But I think it's just sort of in my personality. I'm pretty chill, pretty calm. Even in general life, I never really get too excited or too angry. The angriest I get is probably in card games or when I get out and batting or something, something that I'm losing. I'm pretty chill overall. So even if I get very excited, I probably don't really show it. I guess that comes through in the interviews.
Have you got any role models or mentors that have been really influential throughout your career?
Probably not really. Probably just go to my parents the most for any kind of advice. I think they're pretty good people and pretty positive people. So just if I ever have any life questions, probably chat to them. Or they'll send me a text if they think something's up, but yeah, probably just my parents.
Oh, that's really nice though, that they, you know, can see on the field, like, okay, maybe something's not right here. We need to check in. Because it's so important when you're back a lot of the time. You need that connection and you need, sometimes your mum and dad just go, you're doing all right, check in.
No, exactly. And they have no idea about cricket. They never played or never really watched it before I started playing. So it's sometimes quite nice to just chat to someone who doesn't really, you know, understand the cricket side, because they just sort of know me as their kid and not really. They're like, oh, like, you just missed that ball. That's okay. That's not so bad.
isn't that great though? I'm sure it would just alleviate a lot of pressure, because having a parent that would be too overwhelming, that would not be helpful at all. So you're probably one of the lucky ones that doesn't have parents that are just all I don't know what the word is, but just too much. Like, that's not something that you need. You're already dealing with enough pressure, especially being skipper. You don't need mum and dad chirping in your ear.
Yeah. It's nice calling them and they have no idea about cricket. We just talk about other stuff. So that's nice.
So when you made that decision to put a hold on your medical degree, what were they like when you made that choice of going, I want to go down the cricketing space?
Yeah, they were super positive, which was, yeah, I guess a little bit surprising since they didn't really know that much about cricket growing up. But yeah, they just said to do whatever makes me happy. So they were just really supportive. They said I had to study something though. That was their one rule. So
I did. Okay. What did you study?
A BSc in physiology through UNISA. It's like an online uni.
Yeah.
So I just did that through, like, while I was playing sort of the first 5 years of my career.
Yeah.
But yeah, other than that, they said I could do what I wanted to.
Oh, great. And I guess that is a nice thing to have, you know, a degree in the background and you go, okay, I've ticked that off while I'm also being a superstar at what I do. But it's always that nice reassurance in the back of your head to go, okay, I've got this certificate. Okay, yes, I'm going down a, you know, athlete pathway, but I've got, you know, an education pathway too. If you were to talk to young girls right now who are inspired by you or aspiring to be in a similar position, whether that be in cricket or another sport, what would your advice be to them?
I think for cricket, maybe just to not sort of get too happy or too sad, depending on the result. So I think cricket is a bit of a silly game sometimes. You can have really bad luck and not play well, even though you're in good form or you're doing everything right. And I think that can be the most frustrating part if you feel like you're ticking all the boxes, but you're not scoring runs. And sometimes it just happens. Sometimes you have two innings where you have a bit of bad luck and then you can almost talk yourself out of form. But I think if you just try to stay as level as you can about the game, really just try focus on your processes and not the outcome, which I know is really hard to do. But yeah, just to still try and enjoy what you're doing, even if you aren't really scoring runs in the game, because cricket can be very, very tough sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes you've got to lose more than you win.
Yes.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Don't go anywhere. We're going to take a quick break. But after this, we're talking all things cricket, legacy, and everything in between. All right, well, let's move into sports roundtable. Now, this is talking about your accolades, so buckle up. Let's get into it. Okay, so 2025, you captained South Africa to the first ODI World Cup final. You were the leading run scorer, the first captain to score a century in a knockout match, and the only one to also score 100 in the final. Even though you didn't win the trophy, what did that tournament teach you about resilience?
I think I said earlier, like leading up to that tournament, I was actually in quite bad form batting wise. I had a very tough 6 months, didn't really score many runs. So I was a bit nervous coming into the tournament and then probably started with two or three bad games. And I found it amazing how I sort of found my feet throughout the tournament. It was actually very cool. It almost felt like every game I was slowly, you know, fighting my way back towards my normal self. We actually had a rain-affected game that turned into a T20 in Colombo, I think it was. And it was almost like a little bit of freedom, like we're back to T20 cricket, like I have to go hard. And then it actually worked out, and I feel like that almost took a lot of pressure off of me. Like I just tried to see the ball, hit the ball, and it worked compared to the previous games. I was really trying to be super focused and really control my innings and ended up going out early anyway. So yeah, from then I just try to be really positive throughout the tournament, just really almost play it like T20 cricket and just play my shots if I wanted to. And it worked. I think for the rest of the tournament, I was scoring runs, not really thinking too much. And I sort of needed that one game to think a bit less, I guess, and just to hit the ball. So. Yeah, I was.
Sometimes it's as simple as that, though.
Yeah.
Like it just.
Yeah, it's just overthinking, trying too hard, and then all it takes is one innings where you just free up a bit, and it just kept going from there. So, yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, get confidence back. I mean, I think that's sometimes a lot of things that people struggle with. And you go, why the hell can't I get over this hurdle? And then, you know, it just clicks, obviously, and it clicked for you. And then from there, you just were unstoppable. When you did lose that final, though, as a unit, what did that sort of teach the group? What were the learnings? What were the emotions after that? I'm sure it was a hard one to sort of process, but you know, what were the real takeaways that you think maybe helped the side?
Yeah, it was tough losing that game, obviously. ODI World Cup only comes around every 4 years. So, yeah, it was tough to lose that final. I think the main thing for the group was just, like, believing that we could actually win. I think going into that tournament, I don't know if we really thought we could actually win the whole thing. You know, in India against India, you know, the whole crowd's going to be against us. But in that game, you know, there were moments in that game where I really thought we were on track to win it. So yeah, I think just that belief that if we play good cricket as a group, we can make the final of any tournament we want to. And having the tournament that we had and playing the cricket that we did was so awesome to see for the group. So yeah, I think there's just a sense of belief in the group now that we can make finals if we play good cricket. We just need to figure out what it is to win them, or what we need to do to win them. But yeah, hopefully if we find ourselves in that position again, we can go one step further.
I'm sure you'll be able to find yourself in that position this World Cup as hopefully. It's coming up. Hopefully get the win this time.
Hopefully.
You're known for having one of the smoothest cover drives in cricket, but is there a specific shot that you're still sort of working on to perfect?
Probably any kind of sweep shot. I probably don't play sweeps a lot or at all, really. And it's something that I'm always working on in the nets, but it rarely comes out in games. So I find that quite frustrating, is the hours I put in and it's still not where it needs to be. But yeah, maybe I can play one or two of this World Cup, even if it's a bit of a slog sweep or not necessarily a conventional one. But I think it would really open up a lot of areas in the field for me if I can have a good sweep shot. So it's a work in progress. I'm not too sure when it'll be ready.
But it'll be ready and then it'll just click for you.
Yeah, I hope so.
It'll be unstoppable.
Yeah, we'll see.
Who's been the toughest bowler do you think that you've faced?
Well, Marizan Cup and my team is pretty good. But from another team, I think Sophie Eccleston. She's always really tough to face. I think she's just taller and quicker than other left-arm spinners. And yeah, she's pretty accurate as well. So she's always a tough one to face.
Now, we have a lot of US listeners on this podcast, but I'd love for you to sort of explain to, you know, those listeners what makes this sport so compelling.
I think the fact that you can't really say who's going to win until the game is done. I think there's so many different factors involved, and especially in T20 cricket, one player could have a really good game and win a game for their team. So I think that makes it exciting. It's just because the team is better on paper doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to win. So yeah, I think that makes it exciting to watch. Maybe tough as a fan if you're really supporting one team, because you always have that stress that you could lose a game. But yeah, really anyone could win from any position. I think the game's never really over until the last ball is bowled. So that's quite exciting.
All right, we're taking another break, but we'll be back with something a little different on the other side. Okay, well, we've had enough cricket talk and I'm going to leave you alone with pestering you with that. But we're going to have a bit of fun before we wrap up the podcast. So this is a game of blind ranking. So I'm going to give you a list of 10 different apps. We have to blind rank these in order. So one being the best and more maybe most frequently used app, whatever you want to do.
Yes.
And then 10 being the worst.
Okay.
But the whole thing is you don't know what I'm going to say next.
Yeah, what's coming.
So,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
You got it?
Yeah,
random one, but here we go.
Okay.
All right. Camera app.
Camera app. I use that quite a lot. I'm going to say number 4.
Okay. 4 for the camera.
Camera.
Write them down and read them out. Okay. Maps.
5. I'm always using maps. That should be fairly high up.
Nice. See, I would die without maps. Like, I
me too.
Maps from somewhere that, like, I've literally been driving driving to and from my whole life. I'm always a maps girl.
Me too.
Notes app.
6. I use that a fair amount.
Mm-hmm. What do you
write? And my notes app is the most random thing. It can be like grocery lists to like my deepest, darkest secrets to reminders to thoughts. I write way too much in my notes app.
If someone stole my phone, please don't go into the notes.
It's probably the one app you can't go into.
That and my chat GPT, that would be bad. Out of dumb questions.
Yeah. Sometimes I read through my chat history and it's so funny. Just the questions
I'm like, how do I do this, please? No one can find my chat history.
Yeah, I overshare with chat as well.
Yeah. TikTok.
10. I don't really TikTok. I never use it.
Oh my god. I'm so addicted. It's not good.
I'm more on Reels.
Yeah, okay, right. See, TikTok for me, I'll be looking up recommendations of places to go. Like if I'm going to a new location, I'm like, okay, give me a tour of where I need to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, weather app.
9. I use it a lot, but, you know, probably not super essential.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep. YouTube.
8. Do I still have 8 free?
Got 8.
Also, don't use it that much. Every now and then, when I'm really bored, I'll go on YouTube.
Yep. Messaging. iMessage, WhatsApp, etc.
What do I have left? The top 3.
You've got 1, 2, 3, and 7. You've got 4 more.
7. Okay. I'll put messaging as number 1. Does that incorporate like WhatsApp and everything?
Yeah.
That's probably number 1 because I think that's the whole point of my phone is to chat to people.
Exactly.
That's probably number 1. And like, yeah, cricket-wise, a lot of information happens on WhatsApp as well. So if I didn't have WhatsApp, I'd be late to pretty much everything. So yeah.
Yeah.
Number 1.
Anything and everything cricket happens on WhatsApp.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Music.
I'll put that as number 2. I think I listen to a lot of music, whether it's hotel rooms or buses or traveling. That's pretty high up there.
Yeah, I agree. Calendar. You've got 3 and 7 left.
That's rough because I don't know what's coming. I'm going to put it at 7. I do use it a lot. I use my phone too much in general is what I'm discovering with this game. Yes. But my camera is pretty full. I like to put everything in the camera app. Reminders as well, just to stay on top of it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Your last one's email. So that's going to go at 3.
3. Okay. Okay. I guess that's okay. It wouldn't be that bad.
I'm going to read it out to you and you can tell me what you would change. All right. So 1 is messaging. Mm-hmm. 2, music. 3, email. 4, camera. 5, maps. 6, notes. 7, calendar. 8, YouTube. 9, weather. 10, TikTok.
I probably swap calendar and camera.
Yeah.
To get the camera a bit higher up the list.
Yeah.
My calendar can go down a little bit. But I think the rest is pretty accurate.
I like it. So good.
Not bad.
We're taking one more quick break, but we'll be right back to wrap up the show after this. Well, we're going to finish off with Final Whistle. This is just some quick fire questions I'm going to fire at you and then we're all done.
Cool.
Okay. What is something you've changed your mind about in sport recently?
Maybe playing paddle, if that counts. I used to think it was a bit silly, but I've played it a few times now and it's really fun. And I can see myself playing it a lot more. But at first I thought it was like a silly version of tennis, but it's really fun.
Yeah. Especially when you got a good group of mates around.
Yeah.
Having
and they're
a
quite competitive. Yeah. And I get really into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure. Sure. What's the best piece of advice you've ever gotten from a coach?
I don't know. Probably just to, I think like I said earlier, just to not get too high and not let the highs be too high and the lows be too low, which I think is pretty valid in cricket, just to stay pretty neutral. I think helps me a lot when I play.
Yeah. Which teammate or former teammate would you want on your trivia team?
Trivia? Maybe I'm going to say someone like a Chloe Tryon. I think she's got a lot of friends and knows a lot about a lot of things. Maybe Chloe, I hope.
Knowledge is power. Yeah. Okay, what's a cricketing superpower you wish you had?
Oh, I would love to be able to bowl really fast. It looks so cool to be like a fast bowler and just run in and bowl bounces. I would love to do that.
Just scare the batters.
Yeah, that'll be cool.
No, I get that. A dream teammate from any era. Who are you?
Probably Meg Lanning. I said earlier, I grew up, loving the way that she batted, and I've never played with her, which is quite sad. I'd love to play with her before she retires from everything. It'll be cool to play in a league together one day and bat with her.
Yeah, that would be awesome. All right. Final one. What is a hidden talent no one knows about you?
I don't know. I would say the music thing, but everyone knows about that. So, that's
fair enough.
That's pretty.
Do you like
it.
To cook? Do you like to eat? Are you a foodie? Do you like?
I like to read, but I wouldn't call that a talent. But I,
that's
I like reading
my books.
A lot of books.
Yeah, I love it. Oh, well, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks,
really appreciate your time. Good luck for the World Cup. I'll be rooting for you and the Aussies. I hope it all goes well and you have a really successful tournament.
Thank you so much. Thanks for the chat.
Thank you. Well, that's all for this episode of Game On with Grace. If you loved this conversation, make sure you hit that follow button and subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Share the episode with a friend. We've got more legendary guests, hilarious debates, and big stories coming your way. So stay tuned. I'm Grace Hayden. And until next time, keep competitive.